Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Oh, we're in for a long one. A long weekend, that is. And you deserve to spend it on the couch with a glass of something good. Luckily, there's Drizly, the number one app for alcohol delivery. With Drizly, you can compare prices on the biggest selection of beer, wine, and spirits, then get them delivered quickly. So download the Drizly app or go to drizly.com. That's DRIZLY.com today.
You're digging the Rock and Roll Heaven podcast with LD, Will the Thrill, and TJ2.
Hey guys, welcome to Rock and Roll Heaven, the podcast where we talk about the lives, careers, and deaths of famous musicians. I am your host, LD. Along with me for the ride, as always, is Mr. Will the Thrill.
Greetings and salutations.
And what are you today?
Again, this comes to you from our friends at the Belching Beaver Brewery. You didn't laugh.
Okay, I'm tired.
Just to be clear, folks, we're not sponsored by Belching Beaver or any beer that we consume, but we do share them with you. And Belching Beaver, if you want to reach out, we're here.
Yeah.
They have provided me today with the digital bath.
They can provide you. You bought it yourself. That is literally, you just got done saying we're not sponsored.
Yes.
And then you're like, they gave me this beer.
Well, no, what happened was they made the beer. They put it in a can. They shipped it to a store where I gave the store money and I got the beer.
Okay.
And it is the digital bath IPA.
Excellent. All right. And then today, for the first time in 492 episodes, we have our storyteller, Mr. TJ2, the Deuce. Oh,
that was money.
That was good.
That was money.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
First of all, Will, hat tip, sir, that sounded like you were cracking walnuts with ski boots when you opened yours.
It was crisp. Yes, I enjoyed it. Mm. What have you?
I'm enjoying, let's see, what am I having? I Bleed Orange by RJ Rockers.
Oh.
Session Ale. I think with blood orange in it, I Bleed Orange is a common line that Clemson fans say. They bleed orange. So it's sort of Clemson orange colored. The can is orange and purple, so Clemson colors. But it's quite tasty.
Hmm. RJ Rockers does good work.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Right down the road in Spartanburg, South Carolina.
All right. So just out of curiosity, Mr. T, we are actually recording this fairly early. And that is... that's probably good for you, so you have like time to sleep and stuff. But you know, big question is, who are we going to be talking about? I mean, we just got off the Michael train.
46,000.
I think people are going to find it hard to believe that my answer isn't Michael Jackson. The funny thing is, I haven't taken lead on a series in 6 months. Literally, the last time I took lead on one, I was wrapping up part 5 of Tom Petty. On my vacation in August.
Yeah, we had to Jim Croce opus, right? And then
we had Jim Croce, and that we have. I think we had some off weeks because of some technical problems and some Slap Nuts episodes thrown in there to stretch that out. And then we just finished the crushing 387 part magnum opus on Michael Jackson, including, you know, how often did he pooped and like, there was literally no stone left unturned. That was extremely detailed and very well done, LD. I would
thank you.
Bravo, bravo.
Thank you.
For all of our teasing you. I mean, it's justified for sure.
And ancient?
The teasing is very justified, but no, it was an excellent series, though.
Oh, the water bottle's back. Oh, man. I thought we were getting rid of that after the Michael series.
Nope.
I guess
yes, and we are moving on. And this represents my final pick in our initial heavy hitters draft.
Yes.
We did four picks. I've already knocked my other three out, so this is my last one. And God, this is going to seem so piddly and nothing compared to the 1,239 parts on Michael Jackson's early life, because this is only three parts. I am such a slacker.
And then just so everybody knows what else is coming up, Will, you have coming up in just a couple weeks, you have...
That's my final heavy hitter, Lane Staley.
And then I have my final heavy hitter, which is Stephen Sondheim. So... both should be relatively reasonable. I will say reasonable amount of episodes. So, you know, just look forward to that. And then we'll actually start our new draft picks, which I don't think any of us kind of want to blow our lead on what is what, do we? Like, we don't want to come out the gate. I can tell you guys one thing. It's not going to be Prince. Prince will not be first.
Right.
I don't want to read another book for a while. I'm going to enjoy the next 6 or so weeks.
Right. what we're doing today and starting is our series on the late, great Tammy Wynette.
Ooh. This is going to be awesome.
This is going to be
the first lady of country music. And a couple of things are different about this one from my perspective. One, I've had a tendency to tackle people who have lots of slap nuts, wackadoo, good time, fun stuff to share with you. I mean, I've done John Bonham pooping in women's purses. I've done Rick James smoking crack that he pooped out of his own butt. So there's lots of poop. Just if you want to get down to it, there's poop and cocaine and ferrets and penises coming out of walls and tennis rackets and all kinds.
Hey, those penises in the walls were mine.
All righty.
I also had the devil in the swimming pool.
That's right.
Wall wieners.
Wall penis.
And satanic pools, yeah.
Yep, which is my new band name. Write that down.
Wall wieners and satanic pools?
Wall penises. Oh,
wall penises, I'm sorry.
And satanic pools.
So I have to be honest with you, not a lot of slap nuts in these three episodes on Tammy. It might not be quite as sad as our Jim Croce series, but it's pretty dang close.
Do we need a warning on this one? Are there some triggers here?
I don't think we need one on this one. We will on parts 2 and 3, though. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Also, this is going to be the deepest dig we've done into hardcore country in quite a while.
I'm excited for this.
You know, we did single episodes on John Prine and Joe Diffie. Those are the only country artists we've really tackled since Will and I joined the show full time. So
true.
So this will be interesting. And I suppose without further ado, we will jump right into it. In a lot of ways, the life of Tammy Wynette was a country song. There was a dirt poor upbringing, tragedy in an early age, hard work, multiple marriages, hungry children, struggle, pain, abuse, and even a few gallons of bootleg liquor thrown in for good measure. In fact, Tammy said that you had to live country songs to sing them, and her life mirrored many of her own hits. She went through D-I-V-O-R-C-E on 4 occasions. She had elusive dreams that she achieved. And at a young age, her family thought that she was, in fact, a good girl gone bad. Mm. However, the song she is best known for is not autobiographical, at least not in the way that many people think. Many make the mistake of thinking that Stand By Your Man is an anthem of subservience and weakness, and they attach those traits to Tammy Wynette. But we hope that by the time we're done with this series, you'll realize that Tammy Wynette was anything but. So, Virginia Wynette Pugh was born on May 5th, 1942, near the small town of Tremont in Itawamba County, Mississippi. That means her birth was separated by 2 years and a few thousand miles from that of Manfred Lubowitz, better known by a stage name, Manfred Mann of Manfred Mann's Earth. I'll let one of you do it.
All right. Can I? I've
sure. Thought,
ladies and gentlemen, the Manfred Mann's federally mandated reference of the podcast has been satisfied.
So satisfied.
Is that the
earliest we've ever dropped a Manfred Mann on people? Or?
Yeah, I mean, we did a pretty easy peasy when we talked about Toto in the Michael Jackson episode, but I think that came on like third page.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the federally mandated Manfred Mann's reference of the podcast has been satisfied.
And it's good to just go, frankly, if we didn't do that at the outset of the this one, it would seem really out of place to do something silly. I'm just going to be honest with you, because we get into heavy stuff real quick.
I think you win the award for that. So, bravo.
Yeah, the runner-up would be our series on Neil Peart, where Rush performed with Uriah Heep and Man for Man, but that was few pages in. So
yeah, I was saying, like, literally my I think Toto, my mention of Toto in episode 9 or 10 of Michael Jackson came on like page 3 or 4.
I would have to go check our bibliography on Michael Jackson. the companion glossary that we published along with it.
Don't tell people that. They'll go looking for it. I have something else I have to write. I don't want to do that.
But anyway, so she actually was not, her given name is not what everyone calls her. It was Virginia Wynette Pugh. She was the only child of William Hollis Pugh and Mildred Fay Nay Russell. The family lived and worked on a large plot of farmland owned by Tammy's grandfather, where they cropped cotton, corn, and other crops, along with raising animals. Wynette recounted later that when her family would go to town to shop, they would usually only return with coffee and sugar, since they raised or grew everything else that they needed to survive on their own farm. Now, William was a musician and was apparently a natural one. As a family member recalled in a BBC documentary called The Tammy Wynette Story, that he never had lessons of any kind, yet he was a good singer. He was more than proficient on the guitar, mandolin, and the piano. He sat at the latter of those instruments with his then 9-month-old daughter, putting her tiny fingers on the keys and pressing them. Now, you might have noticed that I said that she was an only child, and you're thinking, wow, that was kind of an oddity in the 1940s, especially in the deep rural South on farmland where children essentially provided free labor. And so, yeah, that was a rarity at the time. And the family may have intended to have more children, but that wasn't possible, unfortunately. When William put his daughter's tiny fingers on those piano keys, he was doing so purely from muscle memory because he was completely blind by that time.
Oh, wow.
Jeez.
William had been diagnosed with a brain tumor that had already robbed him of his sight. And with it being the early 40s, treatment was primitive at best and non-existent at worst. Just 2 weeks after sitting his daughter on his lap on that piano bench, William died. He was 26 years old.
Jeez.
Wow.
Even though she wasn't old enough at the time to have any recollection of her father whatsoever, his death still had a long-lasting impact on Wynette, as most of her relatives called her at the time. They called her Wynette. Her daughter, Jackie, said she believed that one of the reasons her mother ultimately married so many times in the course of her life was that, quote, she never found happiness and was, quote, looking for the support she would have gotten from her father. Now, at the point that William passed away, World War II was still raging, and her mother, who worked in the fields and was a substitute teacher, actually relocated to Memphis to work in a munitions factory. So Wynette was raised for the most part by her grandparents for a while. She did see to it that one of her husband's final wishes was honored, however. He reportedly said, quote, if she has any talent at all, see that she gets lessons. That was one of the last things that her father said.
Wow.
Her mother would send enough money home for Wynette to begin doing just that. At a very young age, she began taking piano lessons, but her aunt, Hazel Hall, said that the instructor told the family they were wasting their money. Though he did not say that because she demonstrated a lack of interest or any ineptitude. He reported that he could play her a song once, and that by the time she would leave her lesson for the day, she could already play it back to him.
Oh, wow.
Just
natural God-given talent. I don't know.
It's a phenom level.
Yes, phenom. If you can pick up, if you're a kid and you can, and a piano instructor says, all right, well, we're going to teach you this little piece today, and they play it once, and you're like, okay. And you play it back to him. What else you got?
That's almost like savant level. Yeah. Just being able to listen to it one time and then take everything in and organize it in your brain that you could do that. That is, there's only a handful of people that I think can do that.
And she's 10?
Sure. Not even. No, she's like 5 or 6 and doing this.
Wow.
Her aunt said, quote, she's just a musician like her daddy. Mm. She also learned to play the guitar and the accordion. She would often perform in local talent shows, though her aunt recalls that she never actually won any of them, which is funny.
Who won these things?
Right. Well, didn't once upon a time Dolly Parton enter a Dolly Parton look-alike contest and lose?
I know Charlie Chaplin did, but Adele. No, that was a joke.
That was a joke. Okay.
That was a joke.
Yeah,
she didn't.
I don't know who was winning all these talent contests in Itawamba County, Mississippi in the 1940s.
But probably not, no.
Yeah.
Must have been a hotbed of musical talent. Wynette would also stand on benches and sing at school and would reportedly be really disappointed if anybody walked away or didn't listen to her.
Hmm.
sounds like somebody I know, not naming any names.
Is it me?
It's a female that participates in this podcast.
Wait, what did I do?
You would put on shows for people, and if they didn't pay attention to you, you would get really upset.
It's the giggling hillbilly. That's who it is.
Here's the thing. All right. That was instilled in me from my mother. So, you know, I had nothing to do with it. My mother was a much tamer version of Joe Jackson who would actually teach me these things.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, she's a tamer version of Joe Jackson. She wanted me to be in the entertainment. Mom told me literally, I said I wanted to be a forensic photographer. And she told me that I should grow up, quit dreaming I was an actress. So literally right. told my mom I wanted to be.
You know that science stuff.
Our mother was just like Joe Jackson, except for the savage beatings and the multiple side pieces.
Yes.
Other than that,
spinning image. I mean, in every way.
Yeah. Also, mom had better hair.
And much better hair. Now, like many musicians, Wynette's first real formal public performances actually came in church where she would sing hymns. The preacher of the Baptist church that the family attended had a local radio program and would occasionally have Wynette on to sing. It was the first, but far from the last time that Wynette's voice would be heard on the radio.
Can I ask something, T?
Sure.
You're calling her Wynette.
That's what her family called her at the time.
Yeah.
Her given name is Virginia Wynette Pugh, and her family called her Wynette or Wynette, I guess, depending on however you want to say it. Yeah, but that's what they actually call it.
Okay. I was just wondering because I'm like, it was hitting me and I'm like, Wynette, because Wynette almost sounds like a first name.
That's what they called her.
Yeah.
Her family called her Wynette or I mean, it's Mississippi, it's rural Mississippi in the 1940s, so probably Wynette.
Yeah.
But that's what they called. They didn't call her Virginia, which is her actual given first name.
Wait, her name was Virginia, raised in Mississippi, making it big in Tennessee.
Eventually, yeah.
I'll shut up.
She loved hymns and gospel music, and she would include those in her concerts for the duration of her career, by the way. But her heart really belonged to country. She would listen to Skeeter Davis and Hank Williams for hours. And per A&E's biography on Wynette, she listened to Williams' standard No One Will Ever Know over and over on a tiny record player once the family actually had electricity in their home.
Oh,
her grandmother warned her, though, that if she wore that record out, she would not be getting another one. But she kept playing it over and over anyway. That little record player was one of the only luxuries, if you even want to call it that, that the family had. At that point, they did not have running water. The house they lived in lacked indoor plumbing, and they had no electricity until Wynette was six.
Now, do you remember Grandma's house she grew up in?
The one that was, like, overrun with silverfish and...
Oh, jeez.
I think they bathed in a creek and, like, pooped in a bush or something.
Yeah. No. So, where is it? That's in Devil's Creek, South Carolina? Is it Devil's
Creek? It was in one of two or three places called Dark Corner, down in Fairfield, I think, yeah.
Dark Corner. She took me out there one time, even at like age 10. I'm like, I'm going to get tetanus. This place, it was never fitted for electricity. It had a basin sink, which if you turn the thing, it would give brown water. And that was brand new. Like that had been dropped in. I'm wondering if that house still exists now.
And if you're naming a municipality Dark Corner, what are you expecting?
You're kind of
shooting a low bar there.
Yeah.
Name it Dark Corner, it'll be great. No.
Sure. Now, everybody, including Wynette, had to pitch in doing farm work. When she was about 9 years old, Wynette said her grandmother presented her with one of two options. Quote, stay at home and cook for the farmhands, or either going to the fields and working myself, she said in the BBC documentary. She actually opted for the latter.
Wow.
Spending her days picking cotton, which, if you think about it, she's already, and she's going to do this a lot of times in the course of her life, she's already kind of thumbing her nose at convention because, well, she's a 9-year-old girl. Of course, she's going to go in there and cook. It's like, nah, she went out in the fields and picked cotton.
My girl.
Which the day began at about 4 a.m. when the family would rise and cook their supper. They would take a snack of some kind, usually biscuits and ham, into the fields and begin work before sunrise. The work would continue until after sundown. Her aunt recollected that she was perhaps not the most diligent field worker, but at 9, she was still out there with the other farmhands. physically, she was in the sweltering hot Mississippi cotton fields carrying a heavy sack over her shoulder. But even then, she had aspirations of being a star.
Oh, T, can I interject?
Sure.
Now, you mentioned about the supper, about how you'd make supper. Very weird thing that has settled in my brain is the fact that we didn't used to have the 8 hours direct sleep patterns that we have now. Mm-mm. Like our circadian rhythm has shifted. And so prior to having electricity, we would actually, as a human race, sleep for 2 to 4 hours.
Yeah.
And then get up and work. And then you sleep for another 2 to 4 hours. And then you go, you know, wake up and work. And so I could kind of understand how that would be supper.
Sure. They would get up around 3 or 4 o'clock. They would cook. And basically they would get up and cook. And I guess just sort of put, well, they didn't have a refrigerator because they didn't have electricity, but they would kind of put that wherever you'd put your leftovers. They would take some of it with them to eat in the fields. And then they would eat the rest, I guess, when they got back.
Yeah.
But you're talking about they're leaving the house at 4 o'clock and they're not getting back until it's dark.
That's insane.
Jeez.
She said, quote, "I used to dream about singing. That was how she would help pass the cotton picking time, by daydreaming about music, often while literally praying for rain." Once she started school, Wynette not only continued to pursue music, she also became involved in athletics. And I think this qualifies as a fun fact.
Fun fact.
Wynette was an all-star basketball player in her early high school years.
Jesus.
How about that?
Is there anything she doesn't do?
The only problem was that her grandfather took a very dim view of the uniforms that the girls wore at the time, deeming them too skimpy and indecent.
Got it.
Yeah. I wish her grandpa was alive now to see volleyball.
Yeah. Much more skimpy and indecent, I'd imagine.
Considerably more. So he made her play the sport wearing long pants.
Weird.
Tammy begged him to allow her to wear the same uniform as her teammates. And he only relented when elastic was sewn around the leg openings on Wynette's shorts so that they fit more snugly.
Oh, wow.
How did she move at all?
It's, well, you know, the thing is, you're probably talking about old girls' half-court basketball at the time. So you didn't actually move a whole lot. You know, you didn't cross half-court, for one thing. There was a center, if people who aren't familiar with this, there was a, quote, center who literally stood in the center of the court. That's where that name for that position comes from. You had two, quote, guards who only played defense on one side of the court and never came across midcourt. And then you had the, quote, two forwards who played offense, and they could not cross midcourt. That was old-timey girls' half-court basketball. It was really weird. You could only dribble twice, and then you either had to shoot or pass.
Got it.
It was really, yeah, it was because you couldn't have those little darlings out there hurting themselves or whatever. But it was totally fine for her to lug around a sack that probably weighed more than she did in a cotton field in the summertime in Mississippi.
Yeah, for 14 hours.
But if
yeah.
she played wrong and she hurt herself, that could hurt her childbearing hips.
Right. Her birthing hips. Can't have her dislocating a birthing hip.
Jesus.
Even when she was a child, Wynette demonstrated many of the tendencies that would become signature parts of her personality later in life. Wynette was apparently, even from an early age, a headstrong girl and one that butted heads with her grandmother, who was apparently a pretty strong woman. Wynette's mother moved back and eventually remarried, and Wynette's daughter Jackie described her as, quote, hard, and said that she and her siblings were actually afraid of her when they were kids. Hmm. Wynette, however, was rambunctious, she was restless, and often unhappy, things that will become recurring themes as we move forward in the series. Even though the family was dirt poor, she liked to shop. Reportedly, the family was once upon a time rushing to a hospital after one of her aunts was injured and disfigured in an accident.
Whoa!
The path to the hospital passed a store that had a really pretty purple dress in the window, and a young Wynette carried on about wanting the dress so much and for so long and to such a degree, her grandfather, whom she called Daddy, relented, turned around, and went back to the store and bought the dress before they went to the hospital to see their aunt.
Okay, that's on the grandfather at that point. I'm sorry.
At a certain point, you got to tell the granddaughter no.
Yeah, exactly. But,
later in life, before shows in pretty much any town, Wynette would hit the local malls. Her friend Jackie Dew said, quote, "She could scout out and go through a mall like a vacuum cleaner. It was unbelievable." Tammy and her mother butted heads to a tremendous degree once Tammy started dating. At 16, she dated, mostly in secret, a boy named Billy Cole, who was the son of a local minister. She and her mother fought over that for so long and so fiercely that Wynette and Cole made plans to elope, but they made the mistake of telling a bunch of their friends. Word got back to her mother, and the wedding was off. Now, if her mother had a problem with her dating the son of a preacher, you can imagine her reaction when Wynette began a relationship with a fellow named Eupel Byrd. Having just gotten out of the army, he was actually 5 years older than the then 16-year-old Wynette. When she was 17 years old, only a few months away from her high school graduation, and fresh off of having been named Miss Tremont High, Wynette and Byrd eloped and moved to Alabama. Largely to get away from her mother, and perhaps some theorize as an act of defiance.
Wow.
6 months after the couple wed, they had their first child, that being daughter Gwendolyn. The family lived in what I'm going to charitably call a shack. one that lacked running water, electricity, indoor toilets, heating or air conditioning of any kind, and was insulated with cardboard.
Wow. So
basically a bunch of walls and a roof?
So
kind of, yeah. And within the only insulation from like the cold wind and stuff was pieces of cardboard that she tacked up to cover up the big cracks between the slats.
So like a porta potty without the toilet.
Yeah.
Right. Yes. Thank you.
It sounds like a porta potty would have better insulation now.
Yes. Yeah. And she had to cook all of their meals in a fireplace because they didn't have a stove.
Oh, wow.
Now, Eupel worked construction, but not regularly and not for very long. He, in fact, had trouble holding down steady employment of any kind. So to make extra money, he ran bootleg liquor.
Of course.
Now, I took that at first to mean that he ran Shine, but I think they lived in Alabama. I think the entire state of Alabama was dry at that point. I mean, you're talking about the late 50s. So I think any booze was bootleg. I mean, even if you just had beer, it was bootleg alcohol, because it was illegal to have it at that point.
Interesting.
Yeah. Even though she had a young child to care for, Wynette had to work as well, laboring as a waitress, a receptionist, and as a worker in a shoe factory. In 1962, not yet 20 years old, Wynette and Eupel had their second daughter, that being Jackie.
Oof.
The marriage wasn't good, though, with the two frequently fighting and money extremely tight. She often threatened to leave her husband, and eventually she did, moving back to Mississippi and borrowing money from her mother to go back to school and study cosmetology, earning a beautician's license. That plays a much bigger role going forward than most people realize, so store that nugget away for right now.
She's had every job on the planet at this point.
Yeah, and she's 19.
Yes.
Right.
Wow.
Her marriage was on again, off again for a time. And while it was, quote, on again, Wynette became pregnant with her third child.
Oof.
They moved to Memphis, Tennessee, and lived in a cheap apartment that can best be described as seedy. There, Wynette began working as a barmaid. Interestingly, given her religious upbringing and where she was from, she had never set foot in a bar in her life until she worked in
it. That can be jarring.
A husband and wife owned the bar, and they allowed Wynette to sing for customers, marking the first time that she performed for an audience outside the confines of a church. By this time, Wynette's first musical love, Hank Williams, had been dead for 9 years, but people like Johnny Cash, Loretta Lynn, Ray Price, Buck Owens, Marty Robbins, Patsy Cline, and others had become huge stars.
Anybody that we know of?
I'm going to keep reading. It's just a list of obscure and forgotten country artists from the last century. I don't know. Buck Owens.
Who is this Patsy Cline you speak?
This Lynn lady and this Cash man. I don't know. Yeah. Somebody.
Yeah.
Wynette's favorite artist, though, one that she was said to idolize, was somebody else. It was an artist that had one of the biggest hits of the year with "She Thinks I Still Care." That was a fellow named George Jones.
Yep.
One relative said that once Jones came on the scene, there was no other country singer in Wynette's mind. Mm. She actually liked to imagine that she'd get to sing with him one day. Mm. And this, children, is what we call foreshadowing, but we'll get there later. The marriage between she and Eupel, which had never been good to start with, got even worse. And Wynette, still pregnant with child number three, told Eupel that she wanted a divorce. But all the strain of work, children, and her marriage turning sour took an extreme toll on her. For one thing, her children believed that she suffered from depression that would only get worse as time carried on. She was worn out and she was dealing with guilt. She had been raised to think, and she believed herself, that marriage should be a lifelong endeavor. Her mother actually saw divorce as sinful. All that unfortunately boiled over. At some point, Wynette thought that she saw a dead body in her attic. She panicked, put her kids in a car, and drove around aimlessly in Memphis for hours. According to the BBC documentary that I've already referenced, she was hospitalized and underwent 12 rounds of shock treatment as a result.
Ooh. Here's the thing. Apparently, they still do shock treatments to this day.
Which really surprises me.
Yeah, but I think in certain cases it does work. So like, yeah, it was much more prevalent in like the 50s and the 60s. Like post-World War II, it really kind of found its footing. And in fact, I think that Jack Kennedy's sister, Rose Kennedy, ended up undergoing shock treatment.
You are correct.
Before getting a full lobotomy. And also, if you know, going back to The Wizard of Oz, which we were talking about in episode, I'll throw out a number 5 of of Michael Jackson's life, where he did The Wiz. There was a sequel to that called Return to Oz, which actually shows a pretty graphic scene of Fairuza Balk's character getting shock treatment. So like, it's not used as prevalent as it used to be, but I do believe they still to this day use it in certain cases.
Yeah, there was something they just did. They were like, "You're weird." Shock treatment.
But Carrie Fisher even underwent shock treatment, and she, if I remember correctly, in her book Shockaholic, she actually praised it because I think it did help her.
Yeah,
so, I want to say, did Eric Clapton not undergo it to deal with heroin addiction?
He might have. I don't.
I think I'm right on that. We could double check, but I think that's correct.
Yeah. Hey TJ, I hate to interrupt you, but we do need to take a short sponsor break.
That cold case you're listening to? Nasty stuff. But you know what else is a crime? Missing even a moment of whatever you're doing to go on a drink run. Luckily, there's Drizly, the number one app for alcohol delivery. With Drizly, you can compare prices on the biggest selection of beer, wine, and spirits, then get them delivered in under 60 minutes. So download the Drizly app or go to drizly.com. That's drizly.com today.
And we are back.
All right. Thank you, LD. Let's get back now into the life and times of the late, great Tammy Wynette. So she went through 12 rounds of shock treatment. Oof. She also made good on her promise to leave Eupel. Now, as she walked out the door with the children, her soon-to-be first ex-husband, knowing of her singing aspirations, said, quote, "Dream on, baby," which was a saying that he often used to deride her dreams of stardom. Many years later, when he made it big, he came to one of her concerts and asked her for an autograph. And she obliged him, writing, "Dream on, baby," on it.
That's funny.
Well, I would have said, "You have it on the divorce papers."
But yeah, he ended up coming to one of her concerts once she made it big, stood in line, asked for an autograph, and she signed a picture of herself to her ex-husband with "Dream on, baby," Tammy Wynette.
That's hilarious.
What a dick.
So she moved with her two daughters to Montgomery, Alabama, to be near her grandparents, but apparently really didn't want her mom to know about the situation she found herself in. She did speak to her aunt, who expressed disbelief that Wynette, with two kids in tow and another on the way, would leave her husband. Quote, "Yes, I did, and don't you try to talk me out of it," she said. What she was doing was largely unheard of. Unless they were widowed, there just were not a lot of single moms in that part of the country at that point in time. That was just not done.
No.
Because a lot of people, like Tammy's mother, saw divorce as sinful. You didn't get divorced. It didn't matter how bad it was, you know? So you're already kind of starting to see that Tammy does not follow a lot of the conventions of society. I mean, she bucked it at 9 years old by saying, no, I'm not going to cook because I'm a girl. I'm going to go work in the cotton fields. And now here she is, two kids and one on the way. She leaves her husband. So yeah, this is.
I dig her. She's bucking the system, dude.
Tremendously so. Her third daughter, Tina, was born prematurely, contracted spinal meningitis, and almost died.
Jeez.
Now, she survived, and I didn't write it down, but I think she did something like 3 weeks in basically like solitaire in a room, but like almost completely by herself.
Now,
if I remember correctly, she was quarantined.
Did I have spiral meningitis? Because I remember I don't remember the actual
attack. I don't think it was that. You had something, and I don't remember what it was, but she ended up having to be quarantined basically for like 3 weeks. And you're talking about a newborn infant, one that was premature, by the way.
Oh, geez.
Now, her daughter Tina did survive, but her mother was left holding a $6,000 hospital bill that she had no ability to pay.
Okay, hang on. What year is this?
This is early 60s.
Okay, we're going to just call it 1961.
About 60. She's probably about 62 by this time, I'm thinking. 62, 63, somewhere at this point.
$6,000?
No.
Now, how much is it? It was $6,000 in 1960.
A little over $55,000.
In today's money. Down payment for a house or a luxury car.
Yep.
Yes. Grand. It sure is. Good grief.
Wow.
Now, Wynette had, as we mentioned, sung on the radio show of a Baptist preacher as a kid, but she was about to jump to another newer medium. One of the most popular shows on local TV then was a music, variety, and talk show called The Country Boy Eddie Show, starring Eddie Burns. The show started at 5 o'clock each morning, and Burns recollected sitting in a coffee shop at about 4:30 prior to going on the air one day. A thin, blonde woman walked in, introduced herself, and asked if she could audition for a show. That woman was Wynette. Quote, I said, sure, I'd be glad for you to audition. I got my guitar and she sang me some songs and I said, my goodness, you'll be welcome to be on my show from now on if you like. That's terrific. So Wynette would be a very regular guest and would usually sing popular country songs of the day because she didn't have any of her own at this point. Burns said he would get hundreds of letters telling him that he should let Wynette sing more, but she really couldn't. She'd make some extra money appearing on TV. I think it was about $30 a week. But after singing on the show each morning, she had to leave at 7 a.m. to head to the salon where she would fix hair all day.
Jeez.
Now, Wynette claimed that she didn't have the best voice, but she did have the loudest. She may not have had a massive range, but I think it's undeniable that there are few singers that have ever had the ability to emote the way that she did. By the end of her career, a swath of musicians, including Emmylou Harris, Elvis Costello, Loretta Lynn, Dolly Parton, Sting, Vince Gill, Elton John, Toby Keith, Trisha Yearwood, and many, many others would talk about the almost audible tear that is present in her voice. Keith Urban said it was actually the perfect blend of strength and vulnerability, and Billy Bob Thornton described the voice as being like that of a caged bird, so beautiful yet so pained that it's actually hard to listen to. Mm-hmm. Now, we're going to hear for the first time her singing voice right now. This is our first musical break of the episode, but it's not a very long one. This is the oldest known recording of Wynette. This snippet was featured in the BBC documentary that I've already referenced a couple of times. This is a small piece of a song called Sing Me a Lonesome Song.
When the sky turns to silver just before dark, and the night comes to haunt me again. When gone is the memory of a satisfied mind, sing me a lonesome song.
That's it? Yeah. That was the whole thing?
So that's not the whole song, obviously, but that's all of it that I could find. So that's our first time hearing her voice. What do y'all think?
It's really solid. It's a little bit quiet, so I don't know if that's in like the mix of the recording or whatever, but it's a higher voice, but it's really strong.
For sure. Yeah. That's the oldest known recording of her voice. And so you're not talking about at this point where she's been coached up and working with producers and any of that kind of stuff. That's just her singing, just as she sang.
Did she have perfect pitch?
She must have.
I think it was pretty close. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Just basic piano lesson.
Sure.
Yeah.
Now, Wynette spent a year doing TV work and playing in clubs and bars when she could. A musician and songwriter named David Vest said that he played piano for her at one club where the patrons, all incredibly drunk, wanted her to sing Yellow Submarine for some reason. She didn't want to, but she did. But she asked Vest why the people were so close to her. She didn't like it. In fact, it scared her to death. She had talent and courage and an incredible drive, but she also had self-doubt and fear. Viss said that she told him she fantasized about having surgery to have the fear cut out of her and asked if he thought that she was crazy because of that.
Yeah, I don't know if it works like that.
Yeah, I don't think it does, but she was crippled by like, it bothered her that the people were like a couple of feet away from her, like the intimacy of that or something like bothered her. to the point that she didn't want to do it. It scared her.
Yeah.
Which you think about what she's dealt with in her life and you think like, well, how could that? But there, you know, these things don't, there's no way to explain it. Now, she overcame those fears enough to finally head to Nashville in 1996. She and her daughters lived in a $12 a month motel. $12 a month. I bet those were some, I bet it was kind of like the trailer park that the Griswold stayed in National Lampoon's Vacation.
Sounds like they definitely have free HBO. That's what it,
yeah. Oh, 100%. And phone in room.
Yeah.
Is it where it says color TV with HBO?
Actually, phone in room, they don't. And we'll get there in a minute. Hang on.
Huh.
She and her three children subsisted on a diet of pinto beans and cornbread at that point.
Wow.
She went around and pitched herself to pretty much every label in town. Quote, I went from one place to the other asking people to listen to me. I didn't have any tapes. I just used a piano or a guitar. I just went around singing and kept hearing no, 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 Wynette said. Now, she may not have realized it initially, but Wynette was fighting a tremendous uphill battle. At that point, most labels only had one female artist each, and they referred to them as girl singers. Radio stations didn't play them often, and they never played female artists back to back. On the road, women were opening acts only for their male counterparts, and on TV, they almost always played second fiddle. Still, she tried and she tried. Running out of options and almost out of money at this point, Wynette went to one of the last labels that she had not yet visited, that being Epic Records. Apparently, the secretary had stepped out of the office, so she strode right into the office of producer Billy Sherrill.
Yeah.
He asked her what she wanted, and she said, quote, a record deal. He sized her up as being a skinny, pale, but pretty young woman, but one who looked a little bit worn and weary despite still being very young. Intrigued, he asked her if she had any demo tapes, but she had none, of course, so she sang for him right there in the office. Now, two different documentaries I watched painted two slightly different pictures. One said that she sang for him. He was knocked out by her voice, but told her he didn't like the song that she sang, telling her to return when she had a better one. Within a week, she came back with one that he liked better. The other version is that he was floored by her singing, told her they had to find her the right song, and that he called her a week or so later after having found one he deemed acceptable. Now, it's worth noting that Cheryl telling Wynette he'd call her presented a little bit of a problem because she didn't have a phone. Believe it or not, the $12 a month motel they were staying in did not feature a phone in room.
No phone in room.
Wow.
So she gave him the number of her landlord and begged the landlord to alert her if a call came in, since she didn't want Cheryl to know that she was so broke and destitute that she didn't even have a phone of her own.
Oh, wow.
Whatever happened, Cheryl saw and heard something he liked, but there was something he didn't like, that being the name Virginia Wynette Bird. Quote, you don't look like a Virginia, he told her. Now, Wynette was blonde at this point and had her hair in a ponytail when she went in to see Cheryl, so he thought that she looked like Debbie Reynolds in the Tammy and the Bachelor movie. So she left his office with a record deal and a new name, that being Tammy Wynette.
Nice.
When they went to record that very first song, Cheryl said, quote, when I heard the first thing come out of her mouth, I thought, God, we've got something here. The great country music historian and journalist Robert K. Orman noted that in the song, from Tammy's very first professional recording session, by the way, she demonstrated perfect phrasing, delivery, and she harmonized with herself beautifully. She was a fully realized singer right out of the gate. The song she recorded was actually written by Fern Foley, Fuzzy Owen, and Johnny Paycheck. It had been a hit for Bobby Alston and would be a bit of one for Tammy as well, so we're going to hear it right now. This was her first ever proper single, one that reached number 44 on the Billboard country charts. This is Tammy Wynette with Apartment Number 9.
All right.
Just follow the stairway to this lonely world of mine. You'll find me waiting here in apartment number 9. Not so very long ago, you walked away from me, and after all the plans we made, you decided to be free. Loneliness surrounds me without your arms around me, and the sun will never shine in apartment number 9. Keep waiting in this lonely room, just in case you change your mind. You'll find me waiting here in apartment number 9. Loneliness surrounds me without your arms around me, and the sun will never shine in apartment number 9. No, the sun will never shine in apartment number 9.
And we're back.
All right. So that was Tammy Wynette with her first ever single from her first ever professional recording session, Apartment Number 9. What'd you think?
I loved it. I thought it was well-crafted, and she has an incredible voice.
Yeah.
So often we play our artists, especially in these heavy hitter series, and their early stuff, we're like, eh, well, they haven't gotten there yet. You know, but she's there.
Fully out.
She was there.
She is the Venus de Milo of country music, just springing out, like, fully formed.
Wow.
Like, quite literally from the jump. That's Tammy. All right. I mean, the voice, even though if you've never heard the song before, I could still play that for you in about one line in. You're like, oh, wow, yeah, Tammy Wynette. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah,
that's right.
Absolutely.
Pretty much.
The earthy lows and the airy highs. It's just such a separation. It's almost like two different singers. It's amazing.
Almost. Yeah, it really does. You're right. Now, that song was very well received. Loretta Lynn said the minute she heard it, she knew that Tammy was going to be a star. Artist Alison Moorer in the aforementioned BBC documentary said that that remains perhaps her favorite song of Tammy's. Stella Parton said that Tammy's voice really jumped out at her the first time she ever heard it.
I happen to know Stella.
Yes, you do.
That's right. I forgot that you do.
Yes, I have. She actually tapped me to try to write her movie because she has a book out, and it is it was a great book about kind of her path and her story. So the book that she wrote was called Tell It, Sister, Tell It. And that's kind of about her path and her life in the spotlight, kind of devoid of Dolly. And actually Stella's put out a couple albums of her own, and they're incredible.
Funny. Dolly's siblings, and sadly her brother Randy passed away this past year, but her siblings are very talented.
The whole family.
They're not Dolly, but who is? Like, literally in the history of the planet, except for Dolly.
That's about it. Yep.
That's pretty much the list. Now Tammy couldn't have known it, but her idol became a fan the first time that he heard Apartment Number 9. Saying Tammy's voice was different from anyone else's and it displayed a lot of heart and soul. The great George Jones would end up being more than a fan of Tammy's, but we'll get there in part 2. Now, as Tammy hit the road for the first time, she did so in a cheap bus that she bought that had no heat.
Yeah.
She actually taped the window shut to keep the cold air out.
When does she get heat? I am invested in her having
I am fascinated by the lack of HVAC in this woman's life.
Like, yes, all well and good that she's a singer, but when does she get running water?
When does she get running water? When can she poop indoors?
When is she going to phone in the room?
When does she have to stop carrying a pistol with her to take a dump? as she did
answers!
As she did so, she did with her three children going along for the ride. They would usually eat on roadsides, and one of her daughters did apparently ask her at one point why they never got to eat in the same place twice. She wouldn't see her first royalty check from Epic for a full year. She couldn't afford a bus driver, so she handled that duty herself. She was her own bus driver. Huh. She only had one hit to her credit at that point, so she mostly filled her sets with country standards and often covered songs by the likes of her eventual lifelong friend, Loretta Lynn. Tammy eventually made the decision to have relatives keep her daughters, but she wouldn't go it alone for very long. She had befriended a songwriter named Don Chappell, who was making ends meet by working as a motel clerk. The two wed in 1967, although Tammy apparently told many family members and admitted in later interviews that she didn't love him. Strong and independent as she was, many close to her said she wanted to be married. She didn't like being alone and felt like she needed to have a man in her life. One friend said she seemed to have bad luck with men, and that would eventually play itself out with Chappell, as you'll see later on. Tammy was going back on the road to start building momentum for her next record, but Chappell insisted not only on being part of the show, but that it be billed as, quote, the Don Chappell and Tammy Wynette show, even though she was the one with a label deal and a hit record, not him. That didn't go on for too long, though. Literally and figuratively, the tables were going to turn very soon. Now, that's actually the end of part one. Aside from the fact that, as per usual, when I take lead on these, I like to have little rankings, debates, discussion points, whatever. This one is a pretty easy one, but it might be a thorny and controversial one. I don't know. We'll have to see how it goes. I have asked both Will the Thrill and LD, and I'm going to myself come up with our personal Mount Rushmore of female country artists. So top four ever in the history of the genre.
I'm going to be honest with you. I thought Mount Rushmore had 12. So,
That's actually more than the starting offense for a football team. There's just four heads up there on Rushmore.
Yeah, then I failed at this assignment because I got more than four.
Well, I tell you what, I'll actually go first. Mine's not going to take long because I don't even have to say the last names of the people on the mountain as far as I'm concerned. Are you ready?
Ready.
Do it.
Tammy, Patsy, Dolly, Loretta. I'm done.
Well,
all right.
Very well.
Tammy Wynette, Dolly Parton, Patsy Cline, Loretta Lynn, and I'll tell you why. Now, look, there's a ton of people that you could consider for this, obviously. You could go all the way back to, like, Mother Maybelle Carter, June Carter, and eventually June Carter Cash, Kitty Wells, Reba McEntire. There's plenty that deserve to be up there and deserve recognition. I chose those four because the four of them really changed things. For women in general, and for women in country especially, you know, Patsy Cline was a badass.
Mm-hmm.
That not only was she picking her songs, but she was not going to be subjugated and put as second bill on, you know, behind some dude just because he was a dude who she had more clout and star power than. And she also had her saying was no dough, no show.
Yeah,
because it was very common back then for club owners, almost all of whom were male, to either just stiff women in general, like not pay them, or kind of insist that like they be given certain favors to have them play in their club. And Patsy did not play that crap.
Good girl.
So she was a boss big time. And then when you get into like to Tammy and Loretta and Dolly, all three of them, again, cast aside the whole thing about women are just window dressing and they're opening for the men, but they also were the first three I can think of that really started writing their own songs and doing everything for themselves. You know, that like we're taking complete control of our careers, whether, you know, some dude in a nudie suit likes it or not. So the strength that all four of those brought to the proceedings, along with their talent, their voices, the songs that they cut, their legacies that stretched from here to the moon and back. That's why I picked those four.
Fair.
All right, Mr. Will.
Oh, so I'll follow that up. First of all, does anyone not have Dolly on their list? I mean, let's be honest here.
Dolly's on my list.
Yeah, I feel like Dolly.
Mouth-breathing chuckleheads.
Yeah. So I do need a point of order on this one, and that is, sure, do we consider Bonnie Raitt country?
Oof.
That's, I already gave you my answer.
Yeah, because that
will... I I don't, but it's very close. And I would certainly, if you put Bonnie Raitt on any list that's good, I'm not really going to argue with you.
Okay, so I'll do my list with an asterisk then. So my first three were a slam dunk: Dolly, Patsy, Reba. I mean,
okay,
let's be real. If Bonnie Raitt is permitted, then I would put Bonnie Raitt. If not, okay, I'm going Lucinda Williams.
Oh God, I love Lucinda. Oh, okay, she's great.
Going Lucinda Williams.
Okay. Is that your whole list?
That's my list, yeah, because okay, that fourth slot was...
I like, and see, the thing is, if you did like a, almost like a latter day one,
mm-hmm,
and it's like, okay, well, the four I did, they're all began their careers a very long time ago. If you did kind of like one from the 90s on, mine would look very different, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I'm probably putting Trisha Yearwood on that one, because she has a phenomenal voice and tons of integrity. Patti Loveless would be on that one.
Stop
and so on.
Talking. You're ruining my list.
LD, have you a list?
All right. I actually started my list off with Dottie West.
Okay.
She was one of the most popular country singer-songwriters in the 60s.
Fair.
And sure. She was the one that like really put the sequins on the dresses. You know what I'm saying? And then she did a series of duets with Kenny Rogers, which is just like, if you do a duet with Kenny Rogers, you are already in the pantheon for me. Like, you're in. Okay. Next one was Linda Ronstadt.
Oh, good one. Great pick.
Which I think we'll actually talk about her when we do our episode on Graham Parsons. So also I'm just going to read you everybody that I picked because it's hard to whittle it down. So I do have Trisha Yearwood out.
Okay.
Because she actually started as a background vocalist and then she took center stage, and you know who she's married to, and
she has more Grammys than her husband.
Yeah, her shelf is deeper. Yeah.
Yes, her shelf is much deeper. And we actually got to see her sing live when we saw her husband in concert.
Same. It was a very long time ago for me, but yeah, it was 1998, I believe.
Ours was like 2015, I think, something like that. My next one was Barbara Mandrell.
Another great.
Oh, Barbara.
Yep. Sleeping Single in a Double Bed is one of the best country songs ever put to tape. Gosh, fight me.
She was country when country wasn't cool.
Pretty cool, yeah.
Yep. Then I have Reba, because yep, Reba's been in my life pretty much since day one.
You can make a really strong argument for her on a lot of fronts. You really can. It was really hard to leave her off of mine, to be honest with you. But, you know, because you look at, didn't she do Broadway?
I think she has done Broadway. She also had like her
Annie, own. Annie Get Your Gun?
Yeah, she did Annie Get Your Gun. I missed her when she did Annie Get Her Gun. I actually got Crystal, I forget what her last name, Crystal Bernard?
Yes,
yeah, was she on Wings?
Wings?
Yes, she played Annie Oakley in the Broadway version that I saw.
But she's had a bajillion hits, and she was a legit rodeo girl, wasn't she? Growing up at first.
And she's also had her own successful TV series as a producer too on that show. Like, she is literally the version of a girl boss that you need to be. Like, she took control very early on and never let it go. Then I also have Patsy Cline.
Yes.
Dolly Parton and Loretta Lynn. So like my Mount Rushmore is a little bit bigger than y'all's. I'm sorry, but like they're like going through that list, there's not anyone that I could trim. There's no fat.
I have 15 tiny faces on my heel.
Yeah.
Very, very small faces. They're very small, but.
Okay. I like that. That was really good. Little difference of opinion on those and some different ones, you know, Bonnie Raitt and Linda Ronstadt, some people who were kind of maybe toeing the line a little, but both of them were, I love tremendously. So yeah, that was great.
Yeah.
Well, that's all I've got. Aside from LD giving out socials to tell us to tell you how you can perhaps weigh in on this if you'd like to.
All right. If you would like to support the show, you can do so at patreon.com/rockandrollheaven. You can check us out on Twitter @rockandrollLT. Our Instagram is rockandrollheavenLT. You check out our Facebook at Rock and Roll Heaven Pod. Our website, still not going to say it. I had you there for a second. But you can email us at rockandrollheavenlt@gmail.com. And please make sure to check out all the other Pantheon podcasts at pantheonpodcast.com. And if I said that too fast, you can check out the show notes. All right, Mr. Hickey, would you like to say goodbye?
Thanks, everybody. See you on the next one.
All right, you guys, check us out next week when we have our second week on Tammy Wynette. But for now, that's a good night from me. And I hand it back over to our ringmaster, TJ. Back to you, T.
All right. Hey, well, thanks for joining us for this episode of Rock and Roll Heaven. This is the first of three parts on the great Tammy Wynette. Now, she had her first chart hit in 1966, but bigger and better things were coming her way. We're going to close this episode of Rock and Roll Heaven with her first single of 1967, one that hit number three on the country charts. Compared with what was to come as this year and others progressed, that would actually be considered a pretty poor showing, as you'll see a little bit later. So we're going to finish up today with Tammy Wynette and Your Good Girl's Gonna Go Bad.
I've never seen the inside of a bar room or listened to a jukebox all night long. But I see these are the things that bring you pleasure. So I'm gonna make some changes in our home. I've heard it said, if you can't beat 'em, join 'em. So if that's the way you've wanted me to be, I'll change if it takes that to make you happy. From now on, you're gonna see a different me. Because you're good girls are gonna go bad. I'm gonna be the swinginest swinger you've ever had. If you like them painted up, powdered up, then you ought to be glad. Because you're good girls are gonna go bad. I'll even learn to like the taste of whiskey. In fact, you'll hardly recognize your wife. I'll buy some brand new clothes and dress up fancy for my journey to the wilder side of life. Because you're good girls are gonna go bad. I'm gonna be the swinginest swinger you've ever had. If you like them painted up, powdered up, then you ought to be glad.
With Progressive's Name Your Price tool, you can find options that fit your budget. Because giving you options is the right thing to do.
Oh yeah, like when I hold the door for someone. Sure, it may be weird if I don't time it right, and they're a little too far away, and oh, now they're running. And we're both asking ourselves, is it worth it to run instead of just, you know, letting them open their own door?
But still, it's the right thing to do. So get options based on your needs with Progressive's Name Your Price tool. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company affiliates and third-party insurers. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
By now, you know that sound. It's the sound of the Home Depot. But what about those sounds? Those are the sounds of an LG wash tower with ultra-large capacity, serving up a powerful yet gentle clean in just 29 minutes. Making this the sound of savings on the best appliance brands. The Home Depot. How doers get more done. Get up to 25% off the LG wash tower with ultra-large capacity and reduced wash time. Pricing valid January 5th through January 25th, 2023. Gas dryer extra. U.S. only. See store or online for details.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com. code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.